28-yard attempt by Seth Small. It is down. It is up. And the Fighting Texas Aggies take down the top-ranked Tide, 41-38. Number one goes down. And the celebration is on at Kyle Field.
Look, let's be honest here. There is only one place to go after your team wins the biggest upset of the year in college football. Down to the field itself. In fact, as it turns out, storming the field is at an all-time high in college football in general this season. So today, we explain why that is, whether it's ruining a sacred tradition. And we try not to, you know, faceplant in the process. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Tuesday, December 21st. This is ESPN Daily.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Dave Wilson, we call on you because you are really good at what we call in the journalism business off-the-field stories. Stuff that happens that is incidental to games, but this one is actually arguably the most on-the-field story we have ever done here. What is the phenomenon that we've been watching over and over again at so many college football games this year that you have been exhaustively reporting on?
We're storming the field in record numbers this year.
Kick is up. And good! Appalachian State knocks off number 14, Coastal Carolina. And here come the fans.
We had 27 that we had documented at the FBS level alone. But that ran right before Rivalry Week, and I know I saw at least three or four that weekend, too.
The Minnesota Golden Gophers can get the axe. Take a look. I see Gophers making their way out of the field.
I don't even think we know the full number at all levels, but I know at the FBS level it's been more than the past few years combined.
Here's a knee. Ball game over. Celebrate, you Hawk fans. And they're charging the field. The student body empties out onto the field. It just doesn't get any better than this.
When did this year start to feel like the year of storming the field, Dave? What stood out to you that made you sort of perk your eyebrows up?
In the first week of October, October 9th, I believe it was, Texas and Oklahoma played, and they play at a neutral site. And I was in the press box, and Oklahoma had this amazing comeback win.
Direct snap, Brooks trying to make something happen. He breaks free. Is going to win it.
And all of a sudden, they storm the field. Texas OU is famous for being split down the middle, and I've never seen that. And so I started asking around. I was like, do you guys ever remember anybody storming the field at this game? And no one could remember. So I talked to a guy named Rick Knapp, who's the president of the Oklahoma Touchdown Club. He's been to 53 straight Texas OU games, and he said this is the first time he's ever seen it. To me, that was a sign that things are a little bit different this year.
So I want to get further into these signs that this season in particular is unlike any other we've seen because, look, storming the field, as any college football fan knows, is not a new phenomenon. This has been happening for decades and decades now. What's one of the earliest field stormings that you can remember?
I think easily the most famous is Stanford-Cal, 1982, what's now known as the play.
Oh, yes.
Harmon will probably try to swim it, and he does. Ball comes loose, and the Bears have to get out of bounds.
the famous five lateral kickoff return in which the Stanford band thought the game was over and made it onto the field.
Rodgers along the sideline, another one. They're still in deep trouble at midfield. They tried to do a couple of... The ball is still loose as they get it to Rodgers. They give it back now to the 30. They're down to the 20. Oh, the band is out on the field. He's going to go into the end zone. He's got it. The Bears have won!
And an unlucky trombonist met a football player in the end zone.
The field had been stormed in that case very prematurely.
Very prematurely by the wrong team.
We should describe the physics of how to best storm a field, Dave. Visually, for those who haven't participated or even really seen up close what this actually looks like on the ground, how would you describe the tumbling? Because it feels like storming is almost a romanticized verb to use here.
Yeah, it's not always the most graceful act. I covered five games this year where it happened at the end of it, which is a sign that you got to cover some pretty fun games. But at the same time, I was on the field for two of them and was in the middle of it, including Oklahoma State, where I was right in the middle of it.
They get it off. Williams. In traffic, dropped, sacked by Colin Oliver, and the Pokes are going to win Bedlam.
Oklahoma State offensive lineman had his hand square in my back, sort of using me as like a meat shield through the crowd. And I just kept thinking, shouldn't this be reversed? Like, shouldn't I be behind you? This is your forte here. But at Oklahoma State, the stands are like 6 or 7 feet above the field level. And so people are jumping down the whole time next to me. I mean, people would land and then roll. It wasn't always pretty. I mean, there was actually a little triage center set up of like there were 3 or 4 people laid out in the tunnel. And I actually called the chief of police from Oklahoma State to just make sure there were no major injuries. And he said it was just all ankle stuff.
Just all ankle stuff.
Yeah. It's not always the cleanest entrance, I would say.
So one place, Dave, that has seemed to be the site of so many different field stormings over the past decade or so is Jordan-Hare Field in Auburn. Of course, I think of the kick six against Alabama in 2013.
Does not have the leg. And Chris Davis takes it in the back of the end zone. He'll run it out to the 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game. He ran the missed field goal back. They're not going to keep him off the field tonight. Holy cow.
I've also come to appreciate, Dave, that storming that field at Auburn also comes with some specific hazards.
Yes, there is a pretty nasty set of hedges that's tough to navigate. It's almost like quicksand for the fans trying to get through it.
Send it! Send it!
The field manager at Auburn told me that people sometimes lay their coats down on it thinking they can like it'll support them if they step out on it. And then they just sink into the hedges and they can't get out.
Yeah, like the magic carpet theory of jacket deployment.
He said they find all kinds of stuff in the bottom of the hedges after that. I think they've had 3 such field storming incidences in the past 5 or 6 years. And he said the amount of clothes and watches and keys and everything that they find underneath them is amazing.
How often do people get like arrested as a result of, you know, being a part of this?
I haven't seen a lot of arrests. The conferences do have rules against it and they do fine schools. But, you know, I don't think there's any, you know, 18-year-old kid sitting in the stands going, oh, man, I hope my school doesn't have to pay $50,000 because I'm about to run out there.
I love the idea that it is sort of the purge for fans. It's almost like a Westworld dynamic where you make it onto the field and you think that anything is possible. The laws don't apply to you. And then it turns out that these big schools get fined about how much on the back end for this stuff.
So it varies. There's a tier level. So this year, Texas A&M and Arkansas each got fined $100,000. Tennessee got fined $250,000 because their fans, they didn't even rush the field, but they were throwing stuff on the field at Lane Kiffin.
Guys, I've seen multiple vape pens come down onto the field. You got water bottles, beer. There's a whole bottle of mustard that's down here on the field.
And Kentucky was fined $250,000 because it was a what they consider a repeat offense. It was the third time since 2018 they've done it.
Emory Jones into the end zone. Broken up at the goal line by Jones. Kentucky will win it. The celebration is on in Lexington.
The fines keep going up, but I don't think it matters to the general public.
Dave, you also did a bunch of reporting about what happens when the general public leaves these fields post-storming, and you talked to all of these facilities workers in college football in specific, and one guy in particular, his name is Nick McKenna at Texas A&M. He has this title of president of the Sports Turf Managers Association, which is truly regal, I would say. So does that guy know by now, like, exactly when field stormings are going to happen?
Yeah, I mean, he definitely has a feel for it, and he knows what games are going to have that outpouring if they win. And so, if, for instance, before they played Alabama this year, he had a meeting 2 weeks ahead of time before the game with his staff to talk about, look, if we win the game, here's what's going to happen and how do we prepare for it. So they had a game plan that rivaled Jimbo Fisher's game plan going into the game. You go straight for the goalpost and you get the padding off it so that no one takes it. And you get security around the goalpost so nobody tears it down. And you get over here and you do this. And then here's what we're going to do after the games. I talked to several equipment guys and they all just said, you know, immediately after the game, they have to sort of form a line and walk step by step on the field and just survey for anything because, you know, they're talking about extremely expensive equipment that it takes to handle these fields, and they don't want any of that stuff messing up their $45,000 lawnmowers.
So in terms of the stuff that causes these turf crews nightmares, what is the object that they're most living in fear of?
Oh, the one that they absolutely dread. And it's a common thing, I believe, with diehard college football fans, which is sprinkling of the ashes on the field. The one line that got me is Eric Klepos at Auburn said, that stuff's better than Roundup at killing grass.
Wait a minute. Just to be very clear about this, these are the ashes of human beings who presumably really love the team that just won.
Yes, and their dream is when I die, you know, scatter a little bit of my ashes on the field at Jordan-Hare Stadium or at Bryant Denny Stadium or at Kyle Field. And these guys have to watch out for that because they say there's nothing worse for the field than the acidity of these ashes.
I love the idea, Dave, that someone has, I don't know, a flashlight with like a hollow bottom and inside is grandma.
Look, I'm not trying to give any ideas here. I'm just saying I'm sure there's ways that people make it happen.
And Dave, I do have to ask, if the ashes do make it to their intended resting place, how do the turf crews go about solving that problem?
Well, it's not the most romantic ending for what we think of if you think of spreading your loved one's ashes on the field, because they said they just have to hurry up and vacuum it up and then cut the grass out and replace it. Unfortunately, the reality of it is that Grandpa might end up in a Dyson somewhere.
Oh, man. Coming up, I want to move to the college student who apparently stormed three different college football fields this season alone.
Delicious, meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
So, Dave, it feels like a good place to mention that I myself have been one of the people in these hordes. And it was slightly more dignified, I suppose, if you consider storming the Yale Bowl my freshman year of college with, I was kind of Enrique Iglesias-ing my shirt. It was open, but it was not off. But I definitely did rush the field and definitely did suffer some ankle stuff, I must admit.
Sounds very dignified.
Yeah, it's not exactly the thing I would want my parents to know that they were spending their tuition on, but I feel like pantomiming peeing on the Yale insignia at midfield is something that I will always remember.
Didn't you just say that it was more dignified than that?
Dave, in the Ivy League, we have very flexible definitions of what constitutes dignity at any given second.
I guess I would be unfamiliar with that.
But you are familiar with this guy, Dave, who stormed a college football field. How many times was it? Three times this season? And I want to know exactly who this person is, how he did it, why he did it. How did you find him, I guess? Let's start there.
I saw a TikTok, actually, of young Carson Bell, who stormed the field at both Texas OU and A&M Alabama in the same day, which I was very envious of because I had actually considered covering both games, and I didn't think I could pull it off, but Carson did, and he managed to be on the field at the end of both games.
What was he doing there? Like, what's his motive? Why did he want to do it?
So he is a student at Blinn, which is a junior college that has a campus in College Station. His family, I think he said three brothers and his mom all went to A&M. So he's an A&M fan, and he's going to A&M next year. He was always going to be at A&M Alabama, but one of his best friends from high school plays football for Oklahoma, so he went to that game. And so he was thrilled for him and wanted to go surprise him on the field afterwards, so he found him on the field at Texas OU. And then he hauled back down to College Station, which is probably about a three-hour drive, and then got there and then managed to be there for that and just stormed the field out of sheer jubilation.
Everyone going crazy.
So after that day where he storms two different fields in two different towns, where does the third one come in?
Third one is up the road in Waco. He ends up there to go watch Oklahoma and Baylor. And then Baylor pulls off the upset.
Baylor puts another three on the board. They win the game 27-14. Let's get the party started in Waco.
He just was like, well, this is my thing now, so I'm going to go do it again. So he turns his OU shirt around that he was wearing for his friend, who's a linebacker, and then he goes and joins the fun.
So what was your sense of 19-year-old Carson Bell? I guess the question I have is this a thing that kids today just know to go and do because there are rewards maybe on the internet to do it? Are the kids all right, I guess, is the question here.
I think the kids are all right. I mean, they just, you know, but it is a different thing. It's like, you know, when I talked about Rick Knapp, who had been to 53 straight Texas OU games, he's been to 591 Oklahoma football games. He's never once seen a field storming in Norman. They've never stormed the field at Alabama. So there are still places where they sort of live by the, you know, expect to win mentality. But I think there are plenty of places where the kids see a chance to document this for everybody else to see. My niece was on the field at A&M and she sent me, you know, 30 pictures of her on the field. It's just part of what you do nowadays.
Yeah, I mean, part of me is reminded of like those horrifying videos on TikTok also where you see kids just like dangling from tall buildings, like taking selfies of themselves. Like, look what I did. Look where I am. I mean, it feels like we run the risk of diluting what this whole thing was supposed to be about, Dave, which is, you know, like a significant win on the football field.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to be a buzzkill, but it does seem like there are times when you've like, you know, TCU beat Baylor for the sixth time in 7 years and rushed the field. It had been the end of a crazy week where Gary Patterson and TCU had split after 21 years. And there was sort of this exhale of relief that they won the game. But it's like, you know, you guys have beat this team repeatedly. Like, why are you storming the field here? Kansas beat an FCS team and stormed the field this year.
Wait. Kansas beat the equivalent of a Division I AA team, FCS as we call it now. And why did they do that?
Because Kansas has had a really rough go of it, and they've barely beat anybody in the last few years. So they finally beat someone to open the season, and it was time to celebrate.
And when you haven't won a game in 677 days, your fans are probably going to take the field, and the Jayhawk fans are here at Memorial Stadium.
Absolutely.
I guess I'm asking for rigor. I'm asking for some standards to be imposed. So in terms of like justifying when it is appropriate to rush the field, can we get some actual math into this? I hate to make it about math here and live up to my own Ivy League stereotype, but can we have some sort of standards?
Well, you're in luck, Pablo, because our friends over at 538 did just that. Josh Planos had actually already done a similar story where he created a metric called "What are you doing on that field?" or WYD for short.
Wait, and so what does it take into account? What did Josh do in terms of making sense of like when you should do this versus when you shouldn't?
Well, he takes into account exactly what you're saying. Some sort of guidelines. Are the teams ranked? Are they rivals? Was it a walk-off score? Did he decide in regulation? Was it overtime? So he really put a sort of a scientific rigor to when it's appropriate.
So on the scale of extraordinarily rushable versus I cannot believe that you guys were doing that, give me a couple flavors from each. What are the extremes here?
Well, Josh's metric by far gave the most credit to Texas A&M's win over Alabama. That was the most justified easily.
Right. Alabama was number one at the time. Yes,
right.
I totally get that one.
Right, and A&M had spent this whole offseason talking about how this was the year they were going to beat them. It was a big buildup, and that one makes total sense. Now, one of the least was Boston College's win over Missouri, just because the schools have sort of no shared history. The game didn't account for much of anything, really.
Yeah, that one just feels like Boston College felt left out, and they wanted a piece of this, too.
Right.
Dave, it does occur to me that as much as I may have opinions on what's justified and what's not in terms of storming a field, it does feel democratic fundamentally. Like, it's not up to me. You vote on this thing and people have voted with their feet that occasionally it turns out they may very much injure in the process. But we're going to get to more of this, it feels like. Bowl season's coming up, as we said. College basketball, we're seeing this happen already. I mean, when you step back yourself, did your reporting change the way that you look at all of this?
I think what was interesting to me was, you know, we remember, and there's even like, you know, commercials now, we're talking about the goalposts in people's yards and stuff. We remember when that was a thing, when people celebrated by going out and ripping down the goalposts or, you know, tearing stuff up. And that's the one thing that the equipment manager said that they've definitely noticed in this regard is that it seems like fans just want a communal experience. They want to celebrate together.
Which does remind me, Dave, that, you know, bowl season is officially upon us. The college football playoff is also approaching. And I know all these games are ostensibly played on neutral fields, but I'm curious where you're going to be next and when your next opportunity to storm a field might be.
I'm going to be at the Cotton Bowl for Alabama-Cincinnati. And I think that's, pretty big underdog, first group of five team to make the playoff. I think there's some rushability components there.
So Dave Wilson, the question here at the very end is, if Cincinnati pulls off an upset of Alabama, number one Alabama, are you going to be there in the center of everything?
I think I would need to be for the sake of journalism, don't you?
Dave Wilson, thank you for always prioritizing journalism over your ankles.
Appreciate it, Pablo.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.